From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, former Canadian Defense Minister Paul Hellyer joins us. UFOs and Surviving Light at the End of the Tunnel is his latest work. Here's what's happening. BP claimed a key milestone in the effort to plug its blown-out well, as a government report said much of the spilled oil simply is gone. Heartening officials who have been taking heat during the tricky cleanup are leaving some Gulf Coast residents a little skeptical. BP reported that mud forced down the well overnight was pushing the crude back to its source for the first time since the Deepwater Horizon rig exploded off of Louisiana on April 20th, killing 11 workers. A federal report indicated that only about a quarter of the spilled oil remains in the Gulf and is degrading quickly, and that the rest having been contained, cleaned up, or otherwise disappeared. Captain Kelly Sweeney with us. Kelly, I got to ask you, do you believe this report? Is most of the oil gone?
Ahoy, George, to you and all the listeners. Well, I'm skeptical as well, because they're not mentioning anything about the underwater oil. And as we've discussed before, they really don't know how much, utilizing the dispersants that they did at the leak itself, how much oil is underneath the surface of the water. And we're not hearing anything about that. And interestingly enough, along that line, I got word today from a captain on the scene that she and half the vessels in her area were laid off by BP for the cleanup.
Oh, geez. That's not a good sign either. Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens. Do you think this popping of the mud down into the well is going to do its trick there?
Well, so far we do have good news on that, George, and we needed a little good news after this whole thing, 107 days. But the static kill that they conducted today, utilizing about 100,000 gallons of barite-laced mud, it took them about 8 hours to pump it down. That's been successful. That's step one. Step two is going to be to seal that with a cement plug, and they expect to attempt that tomorrow. But the final solution to really permanently sealing this well cannot occur until they do the bottom kill, utilizing the relief well that they should probably try that, I would say, at the earliest around the end of next week.
All right, very good. Thanks, Kelly, and thanks again for all your updates. It's the roar that made Milwaukee famous, the distinctive rumble of a Harley-Davidson motorcycle. But that much-loved sound could soon be rumbling away to another state if the company cannot bring down its labor costs. Harley-Davidson warned employees in April that it will move its Wisconsin manufacturing operations elsewhere if it cannot cut millions of dollars at the factory that built the bikes known as Milwaukee Iron. Harley's corporate headquarters would remain there, but that's small consolation to a community that has already endured repeated blows to its civic identity. When you think of Milwaukee, you think of beer, brats, and Harley-Davidson, said Steve Daly, a researcher at the Milwaukee County Historical Society. Right or wrong, that's what it is. But that's been changing. For example, beer giant Miller Brewing Company moved its headquarters to Chicago in 2008 after merging with Molson Coors Brewing. And then there was Schlitz, which forced itself as the beer that made Milwaukee famous under financial and labor problems, forcing to sell out to a Detroit company in the 1980s. And that leaves Harley-Davidson as the city's lone signature brand. It's also a magnet for tourists, many of whom visit to see the factories where Harley engines are made. Sign of the times in America. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was unharmed when a homemade explosive went off near his motorcade during a visit to the western city of Hamadan. State media there said only a firecracker had been set off by a young man excited to see the president, and a police chief called news of an attack a big lie spread by foreign media. Well, here's Doug Hagman. He monitors these things. Doug, is it a lie or is it not? What is it?
Well, it certainly was no celebratory firecracker, to be sure. And it's interesting to observe the role modern communication technology plays. Tools like Twitter, private chat rooms, and blogs on the internet, they circumvent the usual route that the news reports used to take. It's getting much harder for the official state-run media in Iran to control the news or to even put their spin on events, to point even to the point of denial, that an attack took place, like you just stated. Now, contemporaneous with the event, of course, people were using Twitter to post the account of the attempted attack, and indeed, an explosive went off about 300 feet from the presidential car. One person was, in fact, taken into custody by the Iranian secret police, and he's being described as a political dissident. So, indeed, it was an attempted attack on the Iranian president.
That tells you, too, that in Iran, Douglas, these people are very unhappy with its government.
Indeed, all is not well in Iran, and control is not total, as we saw today.
All right, thanks, Douglas Hagman. All the websites of news guests are on our Twitter feed. You'll find it, coasttocoastam.com. Earth's solid inner core may be continually inching eastward relative to its liquid outer core, renewing itself by shedding its front while solidifying its back, according to a team of French scientists. Now, what does this all mean? Well, they say the idea counters traditional theory that the big ball at the center of the planet stands still, growing uniformly in all directions as the planet cools. It could shed some light on the nature of the core, such as its age, apparent seismic mismatches, and a mysterious coating of dense fluid on its surface. More clues to follow. NASA has put off a major repair job at the International Space Station until Friday. NASA says it needs more time to prepare before sending two astronauts on a spacewalk to replace a broken pump on the station's cooling system. The pump failed over the weekend and knocked out half of the space station's cooling system, which keeps electronic equipment from overheating. A Michigan man says he's grateful his dog ate most of his toe. What? While he was passed out drunk. Jerry Dothit says his Jack Russell Terrier, Kiko, helped uncover apparently an undiagnosed diabetic condition and led to treatment that could save his life, even if it meant losing his toe. The Grand Rapids Press newspaper reported that the 48-year-old musician knew for a while something was wrong with his foot. He resisted seeking care until giving in to his wife's pressure one day last month. But before going for an appointment, Dothit says he went out drinking, came home, passed out. When he awoke, the terrier was beside him in bed, lots of blood there, and his toe was gone. Due to fractured ribs and pain in the abdomen, they say it's necessary for Aretha Franklin to cancel and reschedule her two concerts, hopefully by the end of August. So those of you up there in New York, it's been canceled. A Taiwanese woman has set a world record for killing mosquitoes after swatting 4 million in just 1 month. Huang Yang beat 72 rivals to the top prize in a contest organized by an insect trapping company. Her catch weighed in at more than 3.5 pounds, more than double that of her nearest rival. The company has sent an application to the Guinness World Records seeking to get her as the leading killer of the pest. Mosquitoes were a major public health hazard in Taiwan as carriers of malaria until its official eradication on the island in 1965. You know, for years we've been talking about time traveler John Titor. Are we getting close to some of the things that he has said? Up next, the webmaster of JohnTitor.com, Oliver Williams, on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we thought it was time to bring back Oliver Williams, the website editor for the time travel story of John Titor. He first saw John Titor's internet postings in the fall of 2002, and after reading many of the sites where John was discussed, Oliver gathered the posts that John had left online, edited them into a single website, JohnTitor.com. The website also contains email and news events that point to subjects that John spoke about. Oliver's with us this hour. We'll take phone calls later on. Here he is back on Coast to Coast. Oliver, it's time, man. I think so many things have been going on that John has talked about. I thought I'd bring you back on. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to be with you again, George. And I can't argue with you. I'm seeing a lot of buzz out there. There's a lot of concern that that's exactly what's happening.
Absolutely. Give us an overview, brand new listeners. Who is John Titor?
Sure. John Titor was a person who went on a series of internet forums back in 2000 and 2001 claiming to be a time traveler from the year 2036. He answered questions that people posted to him online, and at the time I don't think anybody really paid too much attention to it, but some of the things that he said started unfolding the way that he laid them out. And the one that caught my attention, the one that caught a lot of people's attention, was he had said that CERN was going to announce that they expected to be able to create a mini black hole in their new collider. And that was the power source for his time machine. So after he had left and stopped posting, it wasn't until about 6 months later that CERN indeed did come out and make that announcement. I think that was the first thing that caught people's attention. As time went on, a lot of things that John said, people feel have come to happen. Now, of course, there are a lot of things John said that did not happen. But what people are speculating now is that either John was trying to leave some sort of a code in what he was saying, or he was only slightly off because the fact that he was here actually changed things. So he told us about his world line, and by doing that here, people believe that he may have changed ours.
I would guess it's possible, Oliver, that if a time traveler came here and somehow involved himself, though Teeter wasn't hands-on direct with events, but he did talk about it, he did post about it, that it could alter things, and maybe that's what happened.
Yeah, you know, one of the examples that a lot of people are sending me now, and I don't know if you've seen this or not, but CERN is now saying, well, we haven't discovered that big
particle
we're looking for, but now we want to build an even bigger one.
Yep.
So the question is, okay, if you're not seeing any performance out of this, what do you know now that you didn't know that is causing you to believe you need a different collider to do something?
Well, you know what probably happened, Oliver? Technology has evolved so quickly that by the time they finally got this thing finished, they've already gone past it technologically.
Or they did discover it, haven't told anybody, and they need the bigger one to actually capture it and do whatever it is John said they were going to do.
Well, that's very possible, too. One of the things that Teeter wrote about was civil unrest. Explain that.
Yeah, sure. And I've actually got, there's a post on our site tonight. I updated the site. And basically, I just wrote civil war, and there's like four stories underneath it. When John was here, he had said that a civil war was going to start in the United States somewhere between 2004 and 5. Now, a lot of people have criticized him for that because it, you know, to them, a civil war is people in the streets shooting at each other. But a lot of other people point out that if you look back at that date, that's when things started sliding downhill. And now, George, we've reached a point where if you Google the word civil war, you know, you don't find history lessons anymore. You find stories about immigration and health reform and Arizona and, you know, states that are having trouble getting along with the federal government. It's no longer a word that's just in history. It's now a word that's actually being used in news stories to describe some of the things happening in the United States.
You know, we just did a major show on immigration, illegal immigration. I want to stress that. And the majority of the emails that I got, and I'm talking about five out of six are truly in favor of controlling the borders. But that one out of six, Oliver, they are so upset with the attempt to stop illegal immigration, to, you know, efforts to round up the 15 to 20 million illegals who are in the country right now. I mean, they're very upset and they're very vocal. And, you know, we've seen demonstrations all around the country in certain regions. You know, this could be the civil war. I mean, who knows? But I'm seeing people on both sides of the spectrum very upset over this. I got an email today from a guy who was just irate with the show. Keep in mind, I got five emails to every six for people who just thought it was right on. But this guy said, you know what, all these people that you had on, they're all racists, they're all this, they're all that. And I emailed him back and I said, what part of illegal do you not understand? These people repeatedly said they are in favor of legal immigration. But those folks just don't care. And I'm concerned that some kind of civil unrest, and maybe it can magnify, could happen. And then I look at John Teeter's postings from the past, and I go, geez, he could have been right on this one.
Yeah, in addition, he said that the war was not going to be about politics. It wasn't going to be Republicans versus Democrats or the North versus the South. And he described it as more along the lines of the country versus the city. And you know, I can't help but feel the same way. It looks like it's lining up to be exactly that way.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. What else did Teeter talk about? I know he stayed away from sports, right?
He did. He didn't want to answer. He had three rules when he was talking. He said, I'm not going to give anybody's name, so don't ask me who the president is. I'm not going to give you stock tips or anything else that would help you to gain by the information. He wasn't going to say anything that allowed people to avoid death by probability, which meant, you know, plane crashes and earthquakes and things like that. He talked in great deal about how his time machine worked, about physics. He talked about the future. He talked about, you know, family life. He talked about, you know, many, many things, you know, which, you know, you can look at and point to and go, wow, that does make sense, or wow, that is happening now. You know, we just updated. George, I got to let you know, too. And this was pointed out to me. November of this year is going to be the 10-year anniversary.
Gosh,
November 2nd is going to be 10 years that John started posting online.
That is amazing. You know, we're getting close to the time period he said he came from.
Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, I sort of stepped away from this for a while, and I sort of had this attitude, either John Teeter's going to come forward or someone's going to invent a time machine. And it wasn't until I had an experience a few nights ago where I had a chance to listen to other people talking about it. And there are people, George, you know, I think I'm obsessed. There are people out there that are absolutely obsessed with what John wrote and who he might be.
Some people say Oliver Williams is John Teeter. He just knows way too much. What do you think?
I don't know. I find that to be incredibly flattering. I don't consider myself to be that brilliant. So, no, I'm not Oliver Williams. But I have to admit, I may have been one of the first people that looked at all this and said,
"You mean
wow.
you mean you're not John Teeter?"
Correct. I'm not John Teeter.
Aha! I got you in a Freudian, didn't I?
What did I say? I'm not.
You said I'm not Oliver Williams. I got you, didn't I?
But no, unfortunately, it's not me.
That's, oh my gosh, that is cool. I've lost my composure here, Oliver or John or whoever you may be. But look, regardless, this story is one of the great stories of all time. And as you know, Oliver, I interviewed Larry Haber, who was the hired attorney by the family
right.
down in Florida that moved to, I think, Nebraska, right?
Yes. According to Larry, John's family moved away from Florida and they moved to Nebraska.
And he is above board as they come. He's a bona fide attorney. He said they called him up. They needed some legal advice on some personal things that they were working on. And the true story apparently is that little John Teeter is out there somewhere, and that would make him about how old now?
When John wrote, he said he was born in 1998, so he would be
12 years old.
Yep.
12 years old. Do we know if the time traveler, John Teeter, met the little boy, John Teeter?
According to John, yes, he did. When he was here, he stayed with his family, and he had said that he had met the young version of himself and interacted with him. And he even said that they told him that he was his uncle. So, yeah, John said he did interact with his younger self.
Unlike Back to the Future, if you see yourself, I guess that's going to create some calamity for your life, is it?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because, you know, today I was just scanning the news and I found a couple of scientific papers now. They're just now starting to figure out that not only is time travel possible, but it is possible without the grandfather paradox, which is exactly what John said, how it worked.
Well, you know, there's a physicist out there by the name of Dr. Ronald Mallett. He is working on a time device. He is obsessed with the fact that he didn't really have a chance to get to know his now dead father. And he wants to go back, Oliver. He wants to go back and talk to his father. And he's working on that. And I, you know, there was a little boy we interviewed about a year and a half ago who was working on a magnetic time machine. I don't know if he'll ever do it, but I got to tell you, his theory made a lot of sense. And stay with us, Oliver. We're going to take some phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. We're talking with Oliver Williams, the website editor of the John Teeter website, JohnTeeter, TITOR.com. Next hour, Paul Hellyer joins us. He's the former Minister of National Defense in Canada, and he will be talking about UFO disclosure and implications it has for the future of mankind and the planet. His work is called Light at the End of the Tunnel. And when we come back, we'll take your phone calls with Oliver Williams, the webmaster of the John Teeter website. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Oliver, John Teeter didn't come out directly and tell us things, future events. He kind of dropped hints, didn't he? He did it like that?
Yeah, he didn't come out like a traditional, he didn't come out and say, this is going to happen at this date, this is what's going to happen. He sort of danced around a little bit, but he gave enough information that people could pretty much guess what he was talking about. But he did say some things that did happen. You know, he said China was going to be the first one to, the next one to put a man in orbit. He talked about weapons in Iraq. He talked about the space shuttle. I mean, he did say things that did happen.
He sure did. Let's go to the phones now. Mike is in West Palm Beach, Florida. There you go, Mike. You're up with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing there? I have a friend of mine who's a coin collector. And a few years ago, he sent me a copy of a coin he bought. The date of the coin is 100 AD, and the coin celebrates the opening of the first highway in Italy, called the Appian Way. And what it shows is the Roman emperor is laying down like sort of on a couch. His hand is on a steering wheel, and he's wearing a seatbelt. Now, by the way, I sent this to one of your directors there, and they refused to put this on your site. I want you to, put this on your website.
Well, send it to me directly, Mike, would you? I'd like to see it.
All right, I'll have to send it into your, what should I send it on your website now?
George@coasttocoastam.com. Just send
okay,
it straight
to me. Okay, I could do that. The point I'm bringing out is I read the whole thing about your time traveler. One of the things he mentions is that some of these people have gone further back in time than he did. Am I correct about that? There's one instance he mentions about that. It's possible they went back in time with the car, and they got there. They gave it to the Roman emperor like as a gift or something like that.
Huh.
He drove it on the Appian Way to open up the Appian Way. My friend said something very interesting about these coin collectors. They're very nervous about bringing this subject up because they don't want people to think it's science fiction or whatever it is. Because they don't want to talk about this business, that there's a Roman emperor out there driving a car. Now, if you look at a steering wheel, his hand is on a wheel. Now, the first cars we built about 100 years ago did not have wheels. They had sticks. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Then later on, they put wheels in.
That's right.
Now, there's no way this guy was driving a wagon or something and wearing a seatbelt, with horses or something like that.
That's incredible.
The emperor's face is turned around, and it's like he's parking his vehicle. It's like he's looking around the other way, and you're going backwards, like into a parking spot. That's what it indicates.
And, Mike, you're convinced this is an authentic coin?
Yes, in numismatic circles, this coin is fully accepted. It's out there. Another question, I have a write-up on it and everything. Of course, they don't say it's a car. He's driving a car. They admit it's part of the Appian Way. See, in those days, they didn't have newspapers, so they had coins celebrating different events.
Mm-hmm.
This was an event opening up that first highway in Italy, the Appian Way.
Okay.
There's no question. No, the coin's authentic. The question is interpreting it what you see.
Right.
That's the problem, because he has a wheel in front of him. His hand is on that wheel. And he has a seatbelt. It's driving around, around his waist.
That
now, how do you start interpreting something like this? That's the next part of it. And your time traveler, if you read into the whole thing, explains it very easily. His car was a time machine. And he went back, or his other people went back that far in time. Do you have any indication of that, that he had people went back that far, thousands of years ago, in your research?
All right. Go ahead, Oliver.
Yeah,
thanks,
actually,
Mike.
In the post, he did say that there were other time travelers in his unit that had other time machines that he said were more advanced than the one he had. So he said that, not only was time travel known about in the future, but there were other time travelers going to other times. And, to get to your other point about, technology going back in time, he gave a drawing. It's a cutaway that he claims is the inner workings of his time machine. And he posted that online. So, he was pretty plain. Here's the technology. So who's to say that same thing couldn't happen in the future? That they're going to look back and go, wow, how did they figure that out? So he may have done it too.
His time machine, Oliver, was pretty small, wasn't it, Peters?
Yeah, he described it as being about the size of a large suitcase. It was very heavy, and they would put it in a car so that they could travel around with it. So it wasn't the car itself, but he said putting the device in the car is what enabled it to do that.
Out to Highland Falls, New York, we've got Steve on the wild card line. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have two questions, and then after I ask them, I'll hang up and listen. Firstly, do you or your guest, George, believe that UFOs are us from the future, potentially coming back to observe us, maybe to check on things, make sure we don't screw things up? But in my opinion, we're a little bit too late for that. But if that was a potential theory for UFO sightings and technology. And secondly, what time travel would feel like? Would it hurt? Would it last minutes, seconds, days? Would you be conscious through the ordeal? What potentially that could do physically and emotionally or mentally to the human body? And I'll hang up and get my answer. Have
okay.
a good night. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Well, as far as the first question is concerned, I have always thought that there was that possibility that UFOs and ET travelers might be time travelers coming back to check on us, that they had changed physically. And they looked like we turned into the alien grays, for example, and they've come back. So I thought about that possibility, though I still believe we're dealing with a planetary extraterrestrial type. And then, Oliver, what do you think about time travel, the physical wear and tear on a human being? Do you think there's anything there?
Yeah, he actually talked about that in great detail. You know, he said the machine is capable, I think it was 1 minute per year. He gave a figure that how fast the time machine moved. And he said that when you have it on, there's a constant gravity pull on you in the direction of the machine. And he said it gets very hot in the vehicle. You have to wear an oxygen mask. And he described it as being in sort of like a pitch blackness with rainbow colors going over you and, you know, being in this void. And then when it turns off, you know, basically you're in the same spot, but you're in a different time.
Oliver, did he drop any hints that could be construed to be the Gulf oil leak or volcanoes or anything like that?
No, nothing at all. The only thing like that he ever said, and this is, you know, one of the questions that is asked a lot is why didn't he mention 9/11? And apparently there's a fax that he sent to Art Bell in 1998 where he specifically said that in his timeline, there's a skyscraper missing in New York. So a lot of people point to that as the only time he ever really referenced a disaster.
All right, let's go to Las Vegas. We've got Richard. Hey, Richard, go ahead.
Hi, George. It's good to talk to you again.
You too,
you haven't
Richard.
Been here in over 2 years waiting for you. It's good to talk to you, Oliver. I appreciate you guys taking my call. My question is a scientific one in terms of, well, actually, if the suitcase was in the trunk, how could it get very hot in the vehicle without the vehicle going into meltdown? But before that, my question was scientifically, how could this be done with ignoring machines? How could it scientifically be done? And secondly, are you keeping tabs on URL addresses by number to find out where these things are coming from?
Well, if you go to the website now, as a matter of fact, you'll see I found a article today that talks about a Kerr black hole, which is the way that John described how the mini black holes work in his time machine. He spent a lot of time in detail talking about that, but he said that basically there were two small black holes that were in some sort of a magnetic captivity, and they were spinning, and they had an electrical charge. He said that if you injected electrons onto the surface of these, you could alter the size of the black hole, you could change its spin, and then that's what created this huge gravity wave that you could alter, which would allow you to travel forward or backward in time. And he said it basically created the same physical properties as a Kerr black hole. And I went and looked that up, and basically a Kerr black hole was thought about, I guess, you know, like in the 70s. And basically it's a special type of black hole that is spinning, and there is a point where you can actually approach it and travel through it without being crushed by the gravity. And that's how John said the time machine worked.
And what do you think of the possibilities that as a time traveler, John Teeter basically knew some horrendous things, Oliver, and just frighteningly so didn't want to tell us? Possible?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, a lot of people are convinced of that, you know, as part of his mission, he said he went to 1975 first, and then he came here. And a lot of people have pointed out, well, you know, that's not a very good military officer. He's off mission. He's screwing around in time. I believe, and a lot of other people believe, he was either trying to fix something or do something or change something. And the speculation is that he may have been trying to start a war, that he wasn't here to, you know, maybe he thought that was going to help us. And that was something that he stopped back in 1975.
Was anybody able to track down his IP address and find out where he was sending his postings from?
You know, a lot of people ask that. I've seen that floating around. And I did see a reference to it a while ago. Apparently, he was not trying to hide where he was. So apparently, his IP address was known, and people knew where he was. He said, yeah, that's where I am. So back when he was posting, he wasn't trying to hide where he was.
All right, let's go to Litchfield, Kentucky. Paul is with us on Coast to Coast. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you? It's your old friend, the Xenomorph Hunter.
Super.
I wanted to ask Oliver. Oliver, I'm not familiar with John Teeter's site well enough to understand anything about the modality that he used to crack time. I'm obsessed with it. I'm a ham operator like Art. KI4TOR, I'm proud of it.
Good.
And I've used electromagnetics since I was in my early teens. My first Tesla coil I built at 12 years old. So was it electromagnetic in nature?
I suppose it was. I know that basically it involves massive gravitational fields and being able to manipulate them in a small space. But, you know, the thing that kind of gets me, you know, is that if you look at what John wrote back in 2000, you know, the idea of multiple realities, it was science fiction, the idea of time travel, the grandfather paradox, all that stuff was science fiction. And you look at what scientists are saying now, some of the things that they're saying exactly mimic what John said. For example, and this is one, it was a couple of years ago, they're saying, yes, time travel is possible, but you can't get back to the original place you started from. You could get back to a place that looks like it, but not the original place. That's exactly what John said, how time travel worked.
Okay, yeah. Great.
I really, you know, he mirrors Dr. Kaku, and I remember something Dr. Kaku said on Coast to Coast, that there are slippages between dimensions, and we are their goals and they are ours. And my theory is to build two relatively high powered Tesla coils with opposite polarity or spin. In other words, one wound left hand, one wound right hand. And this actually causes the two electromagnetic fields to contradict each other. And what I intend to do is take a target grade Olympic air rifle and shoot a pellet through it thousands of times and without power on, and chronograph it and average it, and then do the same thing with the power on. And if I see a drop or a gain that's significant in velocity, then I know that there has to be something afoot, because lead is absolutely a non-magnetic material.
Well, Paul, the physicist Ron Mallett, who's trying to develop a time-traveling device, is working with electromagnetics as well. So, you know, I think all of you are onto something there. Let's go to Doug in San Francisco. Time for one or two more calls. Go ahead, Doug.
Hey, always good to talk to you, Mr. Norrie, and an honor
to
talk to the expert on John Teeter. Thank you so much for being with us.
That's okay. This is Doug Dietrich, by the way, our Pearl Harbor expert, who pops on around December and gives us updates. Go ahead, Doug.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, sir. I just want to say that years ago, when I was trying to apply for a job with a think tank affiliated with my Department of Defense position, I did a lot of population research statistics and a lot of cycles of history research on Civil War. And I wound up predicting very much what John Teeter was talking about based on the cycles of the Chinese experience, because as they entered modernity, the Chinese cities fought the Chinese countryside, and the cities were represented by the nationalists, which is why they had access to ports, and the countryside was what was represented by the communists. And because the countryside was overwhelming in terms of food production and their numbers, they ultimately won. In America, it's just the opposite. The cities are the vast majority, and the people providing the food are this tiny fly speck of a minority of professionals who have sold a large part of their responsibilities to corporations. So I predicted that the future civil war would be East versus West in general, basically because the mountains and the missile silos and the militiamen are mostly in the West, and there would be this tiny strip of coast that would go with the more communized people's movement. So it would be more of a sense of constitutional fundamentalists fighting a more socialized urban movement, and the fight would be over food. And this is so important in terms of what John Teeter has exposed to us. And I really believe a lot of what he's exposed to us is the future, because so much has happened in terms of the cycles to drive us towards that. I certainly could get into this for hours, but I think the most important thing is that citizenship, which we were talking about with the illegal immigration, is really the key cause of all of this, because unfortunately it started in World War II when martial law was never declared and citizenship was revoked from many Japanese Americans, and that constitutionality of that dangerous action was upheld because that means the federal government can remove it from any of us. And if somebody believes in the Constitution, or if somebody is a liberal socialist, for either party, that is the dangerous aspect that will ultimately lead to the lack of recognition of the people towards the federal government.
Good point, Doug. And did John Teeter talk about the loss of arms, gun control, anything like that, John, Oliver?
Actually, he did mention that. And he said that what his advice was, do not go out and buy guns. He said there's going to be plenty of them out there when the time comes when you need them. But he was adamant that as an American citizen, it's our duty under the Constitution to be at least familiar with firearms. So that was a huge point that he made when he was posting.
Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Ed, let's squeeze you in here. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll be real quick. Thanks, guys. Oliver, I'm just wondering if John Teeter, in his later years, when he was, let's say in 2036, let's say a year before he time traveled, if he had remembered an uncle coming to visit him when he was a child.
I don't believe he mentioned anything about that. He talked a little bit about his family, but I don't believe he said anything specifically about being visited by an uncle.
Were you the uncle, Ed?
Pardon me?
Were you the uncle?
Oh, no. He would be the uncle. You remember he went to visit his child, visit himself as a child, when he was a child.
Oh, you mean that's what they said.
And he came back in time, and he went to visit his family, and he met himself as a child.
Right.
And the family told him that John Teeter, the visitor, was his uncle. He remember meeting an uncle much later years?
Well, you know, according to John, when he went back,
I got you.
You know, the world line or the timeline that he went back to did not have a John in it. So when he arrived, he returned.
It's a remarkable story, Oliver Williams, and we'll always check back with you on this because it just doesn't go away. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment with Paul Hellyer, Light at the End of the Tunnel on Coast to Coast AM.